Hey, I am going to call this meeting of the Climate and Energy Committee to order. We have a quorum. I need someone to move the minutes. Representative Davis, would you like to move the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I admit I have not read the minutes. I've been talking to Representative Igo. I'm sorry.
He was here twice yesterday.
I do need a motion for the minutes.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Mecklen. Representative Mecklen moves the minutes. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, with that, the minutes are adopted. So with that, we have a bill, House File 5097, with Chair Akam. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, I'd like to move House File 5097 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Here, Representative Akam moves that House File 5097 be laid over for possible inclusion. I understand you also have an author's amendment.
I do, and I would move approval of the A1 to get the bill in the shape to discuss it, please.
So Representative Akam moves that the A1 amendment be adopted. Any discussion of the amendment? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. So on to your bill.
Great. Mr. Chair and members, House File 5097 is a bill to address issues regarding interconnection. Interconnection is a set of rules that new electricity generation must follow to connect to the grid. Currently, in just the XL area, there are over 400 project applications that are in the queue and deemed complete, waiting to be interconnected. As I understand, the reason for the large number is mostly due to congestion on the grid or lack of capacity for new generation and the costs with the associated upgrades. I learned about this issue firsthand when we put solar panels on our home. Our project triggered the need for a new transformer, and if we wanted to continue our project, we'd have to pay for the total cost of the improvements, even though the expanded capacity went above our project's needs. The result being that potential project after ours would not be required to pay for any of this capacity. Since that time, XL has implemented a cost share pilot for small rooftop projects like mine, where each project pays a fee into an upgrade fund, and if a project triggers upgrade costs up to $15,000, they are paid for out of that fund. This pilot is a sensible solution and shares the upgrade costs across all projects in a much more equitable way. Currently, with large distributed generation projects, the project that triggers an upgrade for interconnection is stuck paying the full freight for the upgrade, even though they may only use a portion of the new capacity. These large costs often can't be absorbed by the project and it goes undone. This bill is intended to be a framework to address the challenges in the current interconnection system by doing two things. First, in Section 1, it asks the Public Utility Commission to open a docket that will, at a minimum, establish standards around interconnection that will accelerate the expansion of hosting capacity, reduce capital burden for distributed generation facilities and implement cost sharing, establish cost and capacity thresholds. And in Section 2 of House File 5097, it establishes an interconnection ombudsperson who will review interconnection data from utilities, address disputes between customers and utilities facilitating resolution, look for ways to reduce disputes, convene stakeholder groups, and prepare reports. It's important to note that the costs of the upgrades, as well as the costs of the ombudsperson, will be covered by developers. In closing, as I started out saying, this bill is a framework where the details of the interconnection standards will be filled in during the PUC docket process by the people most impacted, the utilities and the renewable development community. With that, Mr. Chair, there are several testifiers signed up to testify.
Okay. First, I imagine you're Mr. Nissen. Would you please introduce yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Will Nissen, and I'm the supervisor of the Economic Analysis Unit at the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. I was asked to provide some brief comments on the bill before you today and be available as a resource should you have any questions. As you know, the mission of the PUC is to improve the lives of all Minnesotans by ensuring safe, reliable, and sustainable utility services at just and reasonable rates. The Commission has considered issues related to interconnection for a number of years, namely around development of the Minnesota Distributed Energy Resources Interconnection Process, or MINDIP, and the Minnesota Technical Interconnection and Interoperability Requirements, or TIIR. Our decisions are based on Minnesota statute, state and federal rules and guidelines, industry standards, and the record presented before us by parties, and always seek to maximize possible encouragement of distributed energy resources while keeping the distribution system efficient, safe, and reliable, and ensuring fair and reasonable rates. We currently have a number of dockets that are either ongoing or that have recently been heard by the Commission, as summarized in the one-pager provided for you today. These dockets focus on specific changes to the interconnection process raised by parties and implementing legislative changes passed during the 2023 legislative session. The Commission takes these issues seriously and considers them critical to meeting state energy goals. While I'm unable to comment on the merits of these pending matters, I hope the information provides some background on the range of matters we're hearing before the Commission on interconnection issues. Given the importance of this work, the Commission welcomes the opportunity and the resources presented in House File 5097 as amended, so we can continue progress on these issues moving forward. I'm happy to answer any questions and be a resource for members on the Commission's efforts in this area. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We'll go through all testimony and then open up for questions. Next, we have Bobby King from Solar United Neighbors. Welcome back to committee. Mr. King, please introduce yourself when you get there and proceed with your testimony.
Representative Kraft, Chairman Kraft, and the committee, my name is Bobby King. I'm the Minnesota State Director for Solar United Neighbors. We work to help people go solar through education and facilitating group buys on solar to help folks get a better price. So I work both with a lot with people attempting to go solar and the installers that have won the group buy, so I get both perspectives. And when we talk to farmers or small business or homeowners about why they want to go solar, I think there's a few key reasons that are important to think about. One is to reduce but also lock in your energy price. Once you've paid for your solar, you know what your price per kilowatt is for the solar being produced. And as people see increasing energy costs, they come to understand that with solar, they have a way to stabilize that cost. That's a reason a lot of people look at it. It also increases your home value or your business's value. Many people are driven by wanting to contribute to producing more renewable energy that we need in our state and country. And then they want to benefit from the federal tax credits that are available now. So it's 30% for homeowners, 30% for businesses. But for businesses, if you use American-made products, that's an additional 10%. So there's powerful incentives that we can bring, help Minnesotans save money and take advantage of that. And as I said yesterday, the two barriers we see to more folks utilizing that is upfront costs, and then for in XL territory, it's the interconnection issue. And the solar installer we're working with this year in the Twin Cities area estimates that they lose 10% of their business due to interconnection issues. So there's a business, a homeowner, someone who wants to go solar, and because of interconnection complications, they're not able to follow through on that contract and do that with them. So I really appreciate this bill and this effort. This is a complicated issue, and I appreciate Chair Akam's work on trying to improve it. One of the key things about the current system, as Chair Akam mentioned, is the cost causer model we currently have now. So if you want to interconnect and Xcel says there's an issue with capacity, you have to pay for that upgrade entirely. So moving away from that cost causer model to a model where the cost is shared between more of the folks who benefit from it is really instrumental, and my understanding of the bill is that's what it's attempting to do. And then the ombudsman, I think, is an excellent idea. Currently, if you have a dispute with the with Xcel about interconnection, you can file a complaint with the PUC, but really your only recourse beyond that is legal action, which is just isn't effective, and no one does. So to have someone within a state agency that can help clarify, give opinions, and also be a source to gather what are the complaints, what's not working, I think will lead us to develop even further policy to address this issue. There's a lot more solar I think we can get on the grid that will benefit people economically, benefit our grid through being more resilient with distributed energy, and we'll capture more of those federal dollars in our state that I think we all want to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. King. Next, we have Logan O'Grady from Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association. Welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Logan O'Grady, the executive director of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association. I've kind of avoided this committee all session, but I'm here now. So just as a reminder, MNC is a 501c6 trade organization. As of this morning, we have 167 members of our organization, and they range from small nonprofits, electrical contractors, actually electric utilities, agricultural companies, and of course installers and developers, all working together to create a good and sound industry for us to do business in. What's really exciting about this session is we're talking about really nuanced issues, and I think this committee heard about permitting reform earlier in session, and that was something we supported and was great for large-scale transmission infrastructure and projects. Today we're talking about the distribution side of things, and the distribution side of Minnesota's grid has just as many problems as the transmission side, and I'm really grateful to Representative Akam for taking this on because this will help address some of the issues that we see. So as mentioned, Minnesota currently operates under a cost-causer methodology for grid upgrades. And that's been a working model. Over the last decade, Mencia developers have actually contributed about $150 million of private equity into Minnesota's grid. The issue comes, though, when a upgrade is so costly that a developer can't finance it themselves. And so, as Representative Akam mentioned, projects just sit there on hold for potentially years. So what other states have done and what this bill puts us on a path to do is go more to a beneficiary model where every developer, especially who's benefiting from that upgrade, is contributing and money into the upgrade and making it possible to put more projects onto the grid. Just for some context, average interconnection costs for a developer can range from $150,000 to $650,000, and we have seen closer to $2 million for upgrades. So it's quite a range, and so when you get a number like that, it sets you back, and you can no longer move forward with the project. So having a fund that is set aside by developers who all benefit from it will be a really effective way to address this issue. And then, as Bobby mentioned, the ombudsperson is a really good way. It actually kind of recreates a position that previously existed in the Department of Commerce, and it will be a really great tool for developers to go to if we have an issue that comes up, someone who knows the MNDIP, the Minnesota interconnection process. And so overall, we support the bill, and we thank Representative Akam and others for their support.
Thank you. Next, we have Sarah Webb. And I apologize if I mispronounced your name. You can correct me when you get up there, but please state your name and proceed, introduce yourselves and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Very close. Sarah Webby, for the record. I'm the policy analyst at All Energy Solar. We are a Minnesota-based solar installer and developer, and primarily work behind the meter, which means that we're building solar projects that are associated with load often. We interconnect, over 1,000 projects a year, and so this is a process that we have intimate familiarity with, and it's a critical process. It's one of the critical processes by which Minnesota will realize the very important clean energy goals that were set out by this legislature in 2023. And so for that reason, we testify in support of House File 5097, which is common sense legislation that will make reasonable improvements to the MnDOT process and support the furtherance of interconnection of distributed generation. Section 1, the section tied to interconnection cost sharing, is an update that is happening really throughout the country right now, and it's largely triggered by the fact that we're dealing with a new technology that, you know, is kind of outdating the cost causer methodology. And, you know, cost sharing of distribution upgrades is something that states are updating so that distributed generation developers are no longer, you know, paying for upgrades and expansions in capacity that ultimately benefit everybody in the queue behind them and everybody that uses those updates. You know, it kind of skews the cost-benefit analysis so that that cost causer is paying for everyone else's benefit. And this discussion at the PUC can take important steps towards resolving that issue and updating allocation methodology to match modern technology. The Interconnection Ombudsman is an excellent bill in terms of creating a problem-solving individual and process to address the many disputes that arise as projects flow through the interconnection process. It is a complex process, and there are a million places where a dispute can arise between a customer of utility and the utility, the installer and the utility. In any of these scenarios, having a neutral third party available to proactively resolve the dispute will help the queue continue to move forward and produce the projects that you ultimately want to see to reach these clean energy goals and before us. Thank you so much for allowing me to testify in support of the bill today.
Thank you. Now, listed for public testimony, we have Tricia Elite from the Minnesota Rural Electric Association. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tricia Elite, and I'm the Government Relations Representative for the Minnesota Rural Electric Association. We represent all 50 of the state's rural electric cooperatives, including 44 distribution cooperatives. Minnesota's electric cooperatives are nonprofit, member-owned, and member-governed providers of essential electric service throughout the vast majority of Minnesota's geography. Collectively, Minnesota's 50 electric cooperatives serve one-third of the state's population and 85% of the state's geography, including part of all of Minnesota's counties. Minnesota's cooperatives haven't just been a part of the state's energy transition. In many respects, we've been leading the transition with nation-leading energy efficiency programs, massive wind energy deployment, and coal plant retirements. Meanwhile, many of our distribution cooperatives have seen significant increases in distributed solar on their systems from individual member investments in rooftop solar and from collective member investments in utility scale solar. Dakota Electric has over 23.5 megawatts of DG on its 465 megawatt system. Conexus has 32.5 on its 55 megawatt system. And My Energy has over 20 megawatts of DG on its 57.5 megawatt system, which accounts for 35% of its entire system. Importantly, as member-owned nonprofits, our cooperative utilities have taken care to make sure that they have the capacity to accommodate new DG systems and provide timely interconnections without compromising reliability or affordability. Conexus, for example, averages fewer than 5 days to complete an interconnection. Against this backdrop, I'm here to testify in opposition to HF 5097. While we appreciate the bill's intent to address issues related to the deployment of distributed generation, we oppose the bill for the following reasons. It was introduced very late in the legislative process and has not been thoroughly vetted among stakeholders. It's unnecessary for cooperative utilities who have been incorporating significant amounts of DG in a timely, reliable, and cost-effective manner. It effectively mandates investments to expand DG hosting capacity over more cost-effective approaches to enhancing DG availability and potentially over more important distribution system priorities, including resiliency and reliability investments. It would require members who don't purchase or personally benefit from DG additions to pay for system upgrades that only serve to enhance the profits of the owners of these systems. It's far too prescriptive, effectively supplanting the work of PUC's DG work group, which is addressing these issues holistically and collaboratively through a Minnesota-specific lens rather than national legislation. It mandates cost allocation specifics that amount to legislating rate design, which should be left to member-owned co-ops, utilities, and the commission. As written, this bill would fundamentally change how utilities plan and invest in their distribution systems, potentially increasing rates, especially for those who can't install their own DG. Cooperatives have been able to connect significant amounts of member-owned solar under current cost allocation methodology with little issue. Co-ops will continue to add utility-scale DG when and where it makes sense, while also accommodating individual member owners who choose to purchase DG. As consumers face rising prices that stretch their budgets, co-ops and other utilities have to carefully plan and strategically prioritize their investments to make sure that those investments are prudent, beneficial, and cost-effective for all of our members. This bill does not align with those imperatives. For all these reasons, we respectfully urge you to reconsider advancing this bill this session. Thank you for your time and consideration today.
Is there anyone else in the public that wishes to testify on the bill? Seeing none, we will move to member discussion and questions. Representative Swedinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the chance to talk. you know, just kind of looking at it, you know, the section 2.15 and 2.16, my guess is that would be the section that the testifier just talked about, was limit the amount of unrecovered costs associated with upgrade capacity that is not used by a participating distributed generation facility may be allocated to ratepayers. So essentially what that says is, hey, we're going to put an 8-inch line in here, and only two inches of it is actually used with this current project, and the other 6 inches, whether it's prescribed or not, is going to get passed on to ratepayers. That's essentially what I think is being said. And, you know, that's and then the second question is, you know, if there's already issues with this, you know, I understand, is there any how do these costs then get affected by, so it's only the people that are actually out creating these? So if you're, let's say you're a Warren Buffett who's investing in, you know, one of these projects on someone's rooftop or a community or solar garden, you know, how will that benefit the ratepayers, or will that this, by passing this cost on, well, for the or the developer? How does that process work between the two when it comes to, you know, that 2.16, you know, are we going to outbuild this so that we can have a lot of other folks join in, or, you know, or is it just going to be for that initial project? How does that process work?
Chair Aikum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Swedinski. I think there may be some confusion between the bill intent, your interpretation, as well as our previous testifier. The intent of the bill is to provide a framework where the details are going to be filled in during the PUC docket. And with those people, the stakeholders most involved would have an opportunity to provide input and discuss amongst one another to come up with the outcome. This bill isn't mandating anything. What it's doing is trying to set up a framework and a discussion where here are some of the topics that can be addressed, as well as others. So that's all.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, just on, so in the PUC, like I was just kind of wondering how many folks have an election certificate in that organization that would be discussing this when they're deciding how this project would work?
Madam Chair.
I'm not certain I understand the question. If you're asking if the Public Utility Commission is elected or appointed, they are not elected. It's a bipartisan board that is appointed.
Well, I think that's an important point. I appreciate it, is that, you know, because this bill has come in so late, you know, and we're dealing with issues, you know, we're essentially saying, here you go, unelected folks, we want you to come up with a program that may or may not negatively affect both investor-owned utilities and cooperatives who, you know, from a cooperative standpoint, they actually have elected officials that are elected to their boards that can decide whether or not they want to do this or not do this, how they handle interconnections, how these projects are supposed to move forward. You know, this is, you know, this is kind of a change in, you know, essentially how this cost is going to get, you know, essentially what you could do is say, you know what, here, we've got you know, of these 400 projects that one of the previous testifiers talked about, we're going to come to the PUC and we're going to say we want interconnection for all 400 of these projects. We think there's going to be another 400, and we want ratepayers to pay for all those upgrades, whether or not they're prescribed yet or not, or approved yet or not. And the legislature can just say, well, this was just this kind of bill to kind of, you know, set up a group, and here you go. It's not really our fault that this happened there, ratepayers. Now that your rates are going up and you guys are responsible for all these upgrades, like, you know, I think this is a prime example of, you know, kind of this last minute. I mean, does it, from what I checked, I don't know, does this even have a Senate co-author or a person that's carrying it over there? You know, this is there's a lot of just unanswered questions. While I understand it, you know, it's kind of being sold as, hey, if you want to participate in this, you just pay this little rate. Well, I kind of have a feeling that that's maybe not how it's potentially going to work, because we don't have any control of it. Once it's kind of, you know, it's like that wind-up clock. You know, you just kind of wind it up, and when it goes off, we don't really know and what's it going to look like when we get there. I appreciate the idea of it. I think it kind of seems like it's a interesting one. It's just I'm not sure that, you know, starting a program that potentially could affect utilities and ratepayers in a negative way, to allow ratepayers to subsidize the cost of interconnection for developers from potentially out of state or in state, Warren Buffett or not. And I do have some questions on it, and I'm just concerned about kind of the timing and the late and the empowering unelected folks at the PUC to come up with a program that we're not sure exactly what it's going to look like coming out the other end.
Chair Ecom.
And maybe I'll just respond a little bit. I mean, the Public Utility Commission is a regulatory body over our utilities. And when we're looking at issues of interconnection and trying to simplify the process, or maybe more appropriately put to set standards for the process, it's in no way is this bill impacting ratepayers. And in fact, we very intentionally put the cost on the developers and not the utilities. And so while I understand there is, you know, potentially some misunderstanding, I'm here to clarify that the costs from these upgrades are borne by the developers, and the salary of the ombudsperson, again, borne by the developers and the application fees. So trying to, just because we say it's going to impact ratepayers doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to, and making the insinuation isn't an accurate reflection of the legislation.
Any other? Representative Rare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Mr. O'Grady would come back down. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Grady, you had mentioned that the interconnection was very expensive in some cases. And you gave a range of $150,000 to $600,000, even as much as $2 million. And I'm wondering, in those very high cases, what's happening in those cases to cost? It's costing so much. So what contributes to that?
Mr. O'Grady.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rarick, thank you for the question. So every point in our distribution system is a little bit different, and so there are feeders that are at capacity right now that if a project comes in and triggers an upgrade, it requires a large upgrade to facilitate the maybe 1 megawatt project or whatever it is that's coming through. So you need to do a lot larger of an upgrade than you would if a residential 10 kW system triggers an upgrade. So it just depends on a number of different factors, and I think you have some utilities in the room that might be able to answer some of those intricate questions, but there are different levels of upgrades that are needed in different locations, and they're located in different places, and they need, you know, different things to interconnect.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think what you said is basically the size determines the reciprocating additional cost, and it could be maybe that's very far from or like the line has to go very far or something like that. But so a 1 megawatt or 2 megawatt or 3 megawatt or whatever size facility is going to cost more. Is that essentially what you're trying to say than say like a 10 kW?
Yeah, it depends on, you know, what that capacity level is, the capacity of that equipment is at right now and what it needs to be going forward.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do you have any examples? You had mentioned $2 million. Do you have, that was in your testimony, do you have like that specific example? Because that was a very specific number as to what the, why it was $2 million versus $150,000.
Mr. O'Grady.
I asked our members this morning for some data, and I said, what are the averages? What is kind of some of the outliers? And they gave me the averages, and they said in some cases we have seen above $1 million, closer to two, depending on the situation. I can get you the specific example if you'd like, although it might be proprietary. I don't know.
Representative Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would be great. I mean, since you did bring that as part of your testimony, it would be nice to know what, if it's an outlier, why? And if we're trying to equalize the cost, is it really fair to equalize it when it's something that's so far in the outlier? That would be a great question. So I'm wondering, Madam Chair, if you did you mention your testimony about the fiscal cost? Because I have the fiscal note in front of me. I don't recall you saying that. I'm wondering if you could just let us know what the total fiscal cost is going to be and how many FTEs that is.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Rarick. So the it is a fiscal, it's a neutral, fiscally neutral bill. The fiscal note is neutral. It's a special revenue account that money will be put into from applications. There are an estimated 1.75 staff required for implementation of the program. The full-time staff is the ombudsperson, a half-time staff for the docket proceeding, and a quarter-time for accounting.
Representative Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And can you let us know what that total cost is, even though you said it's revenue neutral, but there's still a cost?
So over the biennium, the estimated cost, it's $266,000. Per year, a total of $497,000 for the biennium.
Representative Rare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would just point out that 1.75, so 1 3/4 FTEs, is the equivalent of an all-in cost for that employee of $151,000. We used to be at $100,000. I look at fiscal notes a lot for the last 12 years. And typically, one FTE for state government is 100,000, and this is 50% higher than that. It's 151,000. And I'm wondering, Madam Chair, if you could let us know why it's so much higher than what we've historically had for one FTE.
Madam Chair,
thank you. My apologies, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. And when I could maybe look to the PUC for their recommendation, but I think that because this interconnection process is quite complicated and detailed, the level of knowledge and experience that person would need is quite high. So looking toward a higher salary based on similar qualifications and pay scale.
Representative Rare.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, still rather high. Moving on. So I have a letter in front of me from Xcel Energy, and just like the co-ops that came before us, Xcel Energy, who this is primarily concerning, also has concerns. And instead of reading all this into the record, Madam Chair, I'm wondering if you could just let us know what your thoughts are about that and their concerns. Essentially is saying if there's a misalignment, it may cause the project to not move forward, an economic misalignment. I'm wondering if you could speak to that and address their concerns.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. And so in conversations with Xcel about this issue, there have been concerns about what they perceive to be a potential gap. And as I referred to earlier, this bill as drafted is not prescribing a gap. What it is recommending are topics to be discussed within the docket. And so the opportunity there to address exactly what Excel's concern is would be there. And so I think that we have been in conversations and continue to be in conversations about ensuring there's an understanding. I would also say that there's a lot of support from Excel to address this issue and support for the model that this is trying to emulate, which is out of New York State, where the utility worked collaboratively with the development community to establish the standards. And I would say that collaborative approach really looks to be something that both parties are buying into and with a lot more success and less conflict.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so this letter was drafted yesterday and it's still on our packet today. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that Xcel Energy still has the same concerns as was drafted in this letter. And it is about the gap and literally being so detrimental that the work may not go forward. So what this letter says and what you're saying don't really line up. I hope that you take them seriously and that you move forward and have serious conversations. Let me move on to the opposition from the co-ops and being pulled into this, even though they feel like they're already doing a lot of this. They had a lot of examples of that they're in compliance with this. They're already pulling in DG and you know, taking care of these issues. Have you had conversations with the co-ops to alleviate some of their concerns that they just testified to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And no, they haven't reached out to me. And so I have not had a chance to speak with them. And the testimony today was the first I had heard. I did speak to MMUA yesterday about some concerns. And so I certainly appreciate their concerns. Happy to continue to talk with them. Happy to initiate a conversation.
Representative Breyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Madam Chair, I'm not sure that that's accurate, but I would love for that to actually happen. And I'm sure that, you know.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Yeah. I don't think that was appropriate, Representative, to say that that's not accurate. I have had no conversations with them about this issue.
Maybe they could speak to that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. But I don't think we need to get into he said, she said here. If the chair is saying that there hasn't been a discussion, then why would we question whether there's been a discussion? Ms. Elite, you may make a comment.
I guess if you're asking to know what we've done on this issue before testifying, I reached out to Mike, the committee administrator, stopped by his office and let him know we had concerns and that we requested a meeting as well with Representative Acom, and that has not been provided. But given that it was a late introduction and scheduled, we reached out. I made a phone call immediately upon being scheduled. I stopped by the next day the legislature was open. I requested a meeting, so I didn't want to, I just, to clarify on what has or hasn't been done, that would be my perspective.
Before you leave, then, can I just clarify, have we spoken about this yet?
No, so if the question is, have we specifically spoken on it, no.
Thank you. So, Representative Rarick.
Okay. So I will just summarize then that this was a late introduction, as was just spoken again, that there are concerns from those that are being regulated by this. And I think that it's a bit too quick and too early to move forward with this. And I hope I don't see this in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
There are no further comments. We'll turn it over to Madam Chair for final remarks.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members for the questions. It's unfortunate, given many of the misunderstandings. This is not a bill that is mandating. This is not over-regulating anyone or any co-ops or munis. This is established to get utilities and developers to be working together to achieve our common goals. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, encourage we support the bill.
So with that, Chair Acom renews her motion that House File 5097 as amended be laid over, and the bill is laid over, and at this point we are adjourned.